Prime Time all day long.
20 minutes after 7, good morning to you. An important comment by the Minister of Social Development yesterday, Lindiwe Zulu, that the idea of a basic income grant is, quote, back on the table, end quote, that it would cover people aged between 18 and 59. Those are people who don't get a grant now. Of course, this comes in the middle of a situation where many people still have not received the social relief of distress grant of 350 Rand a month during COVID-19. Isabel Fry is the Director of the Studies in Poverty and Inequality Institute. Isabel, good morning. Thanks for your time.
Morning, Stephen. Thank you for the invitation.
This has been a debate for many, many years. Do you now think it's going to happen? There'll be a basic income grant in South Africa.
I think just to take that question from the beginning, it has been a debate for many years. In 2002, the Taylor Report recommended the adoption of a basic income grant in order to address the universal levels of poverty. I have to say that the announcement took me unawares, and I think it shows the power of the media that it was a question from a journalist. Just thinking about the strengths and really whether or not this will happen, I think on the one hand, it addresses the fact that already 10 million people were unemployed in the first quarter, that 3 million informal workers are facing jeopardy, and the fact that the business sector said that last month alone, 1 million jobs had been lost. So there is a universal need in South Africa. I think the question of having universal rather than a targeted grant means that we should cut out a lot of that administration hurdles. So basically, it's linked to an ID number, which can then go through the system, which is much easier than then trying to see whether or not you've received unemployment insurance over the last couple of years, etc., where some of the downfall is. I do think, Stephen, we must look at some of the challenges. Having been part of an 8-year negotiation process in NEDLAC for comprehensive social security, one of the challenges that we see is that there is an orthodox conservatism within National Treasury with regards to expanding this comprehensive social security safety net. And that really needs to be addressed. My colleague Duma Krobule, on a podcast that the two of us run Rewired, was unpacking some of the heterodox approaches to funding. And I think for this announcement by the minister to really take sort of credence, we need to be seeing where the financing will be coming from.
Why would a basic income grant be a good thing? What do you believe it would achieve? I mean, I know that, as I understand it, you do support such a grant.
I do support such a grant on a variety of legs. I mean, firstly, as a human rights lawyer, it addresses the constitutional imperative on the state to make available social security and social assistance. In addition, and specifically in a time like this, it acts as an economic surplus. It creates the ability for people to demand, and so it stimulates the circulation within the economy. Right now, we've got millions of people who are not able to actively participate in the economy. So even if we were to reindustrialize and address a lot of the recovery initiatives that the state's advocating, we just simply don't have the demand. So we have idle wealth lying in limited hands, which frequently buys imported goods. This, I believe, not only will address people's needs, such as the growing levels of hunger, but it would also act as a long-term stimulus, which is what is desperately needed right now.
There's going to be a huge debate if it comes about the level, right? In other words, how much each person would receive. And I realize, and I think it might be important to mention, that people who have other forms of income would give the money back through tax, as I understand it. So if you received a basic income grant and you have a job, SARS will, don't worry, SARS will come and take the money back from you. So it doesn't necessarily cost as much as it looks like. But for you, the research that your institute does, what kind of sort of monthly payment do you think would be appropriate? And I imagine that there'll be some people who say it should be 100 Rand, there'll be some people who say it should be 10,000 Rand.
Absolutely, and this is why a debate, an urgent debate is needed. Look, Stephen, from the work that we've done at SPI together with the collegiate research organizations, we've come up with a decent standard of living level, which links it basically a democratically defined standard. And the monetary value of that is just over 7,600 Rand per month.
7,000 Rand?
Wait, Stephen, I haven't finished. So I said that that would be the ideal. However, it's also very clear that that's something which needs to be progressively realized. as the wealth of South Africa increases. And so what we need to be looking at is entry level, which is then indexed against some kind of median national income. Now, there are a number of lines that have been put forward. Is a food poverty line of 561 rand per person per month, which would seem to be a starting point. There are civil society organizations, however, that claim that to go below the upper bound poverty line of 1,277 rand would make a mockery of the initiative. So to my mind, what needs to be discussed is an entry-level line that lies between the starvation line, the food poverty line, and the upper bound poverty line,
okay,
and then with an aspiration towards a decent standard of living.
Okay, and I mean, obviously, this leads to the next question, is can we really afford it? I mean, you know, and already you should see my Twitter timeline, Isabel. You know, we have all sorts of people saying that, you know, 9% of people are paying the majority of the country's tax income at the moment. I think the tax take last year was about 1.4 trillion rand. It's going to be a lot less this year because of COVID. Can government really afford something like this? Can we as a country really afford something like this?
Again, that comes down to political economy, Stephen. So I think the question is, do we want to be able to afford it? There are a number of sources that have been identified. For instance, the Government Employee Pension Fund is fully funded right now, and that's almost an international anomaly. So there are ways in which we can have support from some of the existing funds, the Unemployment Insurance Fund. One of the big things that we need to recognize, however, is that since 1990, corporate tax in South Africa has fallen from 50% to 28%. So the business sector keeps on arguing that they need to pay lower taxes in order to stimulate greater economic activity. But we've seen that more and more of the wealth generated has been taken out as profits. And so the levels of wealth amongst those who own assets has grown exponentially at the ability of the state to provide these kind of services. So it's a question of will. It's also a question of looking at tackling ways in which money's leaving the country. So we know, for instance, that there are billions leaving the country every year in terms of irregular transfer pricing. We need to look at what the true balance sheets are. And from that, there are ways in which we can make the initial investment. And the research shows time and time again that the returns, the multiplier effects on that basic income grant, on the universal cash transfer into households, into people's pockets, begins to pay for itself really immediately. As we all know, VAT is something which is paid by every consumer. If you enable ordinary people, you're not employed and hence not paying income tax, to start consuming, you get that back into the fiscus almost immediately.
Isabel Fry, thanks very much indeed. Director on behalf of the Studies of Poverty and Inequality Unit. To appreciate the time, 28 minutes after.